just been playing with loaders, and although there's the temptation to ask about future releases and things like that, I was wondering if you guys had any experience using Mark Murphy's SQLite loader, which is designed to work with databases.
So I saw that that he just open sourced a new library of loaders, and I had a quick look at it. But why would you want to use this direct to SQLite rather than going through a content provider out of interest? In most of my experience, whenever you're using a SQLite database, you're putting a content provider on top of it.
One of the things I'm doing is joining across multiple tables, so the back-end database is a replica of an external data source, and so there are separate tables that I'm doing a join across, and rather than having a content provider for each of those joins to handle selects and inserts and things like that, I just wanted to have a loader that ran the query that I wanted to run and did the join, and just basically as a shortcut to avoid a lot of code.
Mm-hmm. So you found it useful?
Yeah.
You just basically write your own exec SQL statement that's exactly the same data you want.
That's it. I mean, the other thing about Mark's framework is he's got some async tasks for performing database CRUD operations, so it takes a lot of the sort of thinking load off of whether or not database modifications are being done on the UI thread, which is quite a cool thing.
Yeah, no, well, he's some fantastic
useful stuff. I'll pop the link to it in the notes if you guys don't mind, so if anyone else is after it, they can go and grab it.
Good idea. So welcome to a few more live participants as well. Sparky seems to have disappeared for me. I can't see him, but maybe he's got some connectivity issues. But yeah, welcome to some other live participants. We've got Tarza, see, hello.
Hi.
And Sean and Edgar are also joining us live, so welcome to you guys. Do you guys have any Android?
I had one. I am implementing LinkedIn connectivity to my app, and as a result, in order for me to get access to the person's LinkedIn information, I need to send him to the browser to log into his account, and only then I can access the information. My question is, how do I use a URL callback to return from the browser after he logged in back to my app?
So I think one of the most common ways of doing this is by most of these WebAuth will allow you to tell them a URL to redirect to once the auth handshake is finished. So if you specify like a very specific URL, and then you set up an intent filter in your application which handles that URL, then you can do it that way.
Mm-hmm. The thing is, after he logs in, I get a special token, some kind of a number that I need to pull back to use for the rest of the connectivity, the rest of the time he's connected.
Yeah.
So
I'd pass that in the URL as well.
Okay, so I should use WebView then? Oh.
So you could either embed it as a web view, but that kind of breaks the whole point of OAuth, that you can see the URL and you're really under the website's domain, right? So that's your choice, really. I don't think there's a really great solution on mobile apps at the moment for this. The other thing you could do is you could probably use Account Manager with the OAuth 2 scope as well, couldn't you?
Okay. I'll check those two out. Thank you.
Okay. We've got Sparky back now. I see he's joined the chat, but I can't see him. Does anyone else have a live question while we're in the Hangout? We have Edgar and Sean in the room as well. Take that as a no. Feel free to tap out questions either in the chat here in the Hangout if you like, or if you're following along on the live stream, then feel free to ask questions on the Android developers thread on Google+, and we will read them out and try and answer them. Okay, well, in the absence of any live questions, so feel free to speak if anyone's got more questions. But has anyone caught the, I guess, most interesting news, Android news this week, is the launch of subscription billing. Everyone catch that, yeah?
Yeah. Are there any restrictions on what people can subscribe to? So can they subscribe to, say, a physical service, such as delivery of toothbrush heads every couple of months, or is it just limited to digital goods?
I'd have to check the docs to be sure, but I'm pretty sure it's built on top of the in-app billing infrastructure, so I'm pretty sure it'll be the same, you know, prerequisites and restrictions as that, so not physical goods.
Okay, cool.
Dollar Shave Club.
No, I was just thinking Amazon do a subscription service where they offer money off, and it would be great to have sort of an Android app where you could pick out what the stuff was and subscribe to something, or even if there was a digital magazine, a digital version of a magazine, being able to subscribe to the physical version would be quite cool.
No, I believe there's still that restriction in our terms and conditions about not the use of physical goods. I don't know where that comes from or why, but I believe that's still the case.
I guess a 15-minute refund period is pretty harsh if you haven't even got the stuff in the post. Have you got the moderator up there, Nick?
I have got the moderator, but...
I was wondering if we've got any questions from there, because having a look at it, there looks like a number of questions there you might want to have a go at, if no one else has got any live questions.
Yeah, we just had Moshi, is it Moshi? Just join us. And is the Edgar Garcia as well? Hi, guys. You have a question you wanted to ask? Else we're going to jump into the moderator thread where people have asked some questions ahead of time. Okay, we'll jump to the moderator.
There's an interesting one about how to what's a recommended process for communicating between fragments.
Okay. So what is the best way to implement communication between fragments? For example, I have multiple layout with two list fragments. I choose a list entry from the right container view, which opens a detail fragment in the right container. Okay. So the easiest way to do it, to answer this, is by saying you have like an interface. And you either pass messages via the hosting activity, or you can actually set a listener on one of the other fragments and register it in the activity. So if you think about it, you have fragments A and B, and A needs to tell B something. The key thing here is that you don't want to force A and B to know anything about each other. They want to be decoupled from each other. You want to use something like passing, you know, using a callback interface by the activity in order to notify each other. If you're using a framework like RoboJuice, for example, and that offers like an event bus, which will allow you to do the same kind of thing where you just fire up an event and you have a subscriber, so something further. So that's the key thing to remember, really, that you don't really want to hard code and communication between them. You don't have to do like most of the apps that you need to fragment the layouts and other scenarios without breaking the behavior. Take a look at the sample code. Most of the sample apps, basically one fragment will declare an interface and the other fragment will implement it. And then you use the parent activity. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I don't know about anyone else, but you're coming through a little quiet and a little crackly to me, Nick. I don't know if the microphone's a bit further away than normal or something.
Really? I'm
trying
to speak clearly now.
Okay.
Cool. Next question, the moderator says, is there some API to add your content to a standard Android lock screen? So the answer to that is no. The stock Android lock screen, there is as a vice screen from a method to display the music we're currently playing is and that's it. Lock screen, like a popular one on the market is Widget Locker. Oh, it went very quiet, but I think Targus broadcast. Which basically do the same job as the stock lock screen, but offer a different variety of functionality. So you might want to look into services such as that, but currently, no, there's no way to show extra options.
I can throw one across to you that I saw come across on a Twitter feed yesterday. Was someone was looking at the best way to do a three-level nested list that would work on both tablets and on phones as well. Are there any recommendations for handling that? Because I know there's a two-level one that's part of the framework.
A three-level nested one. Oh, so you kind of like you can open it up and have subsections.
Yeah.
I've not really seen any kind of like example code for doing that. You can think of any examples in the platform. I'm trying to think of anything that does that.
There isn't anything there. I think that was part of what the question was around, because you've got the expandable list adapter, which will give you the two levels. And it's just sort of if something needs to go a level beyond that, is it better to try and make it a single list that expands, or is it worth trying to move users between screens instead of trying to fit multiple levels into a single list view?
Yeah, I do worry that sounds like it gets quite complicated as well when you have three levels within a single list. I would probably start to err towards shifting to another list view. So clicking on a single item actually launches you into a subview. If you do need to put them all together into a single view, then you could just look at the source of the expandable list view and see if you can adapt that source for your use case. But I would start to worry about users getting lost when you kind of have these three different like levels, when you get too deep into your hierarchy, really.
Cool. Thanks.
Cool. Sparky says he's having some issues.
Hello.
Hi, how's it going?
Hello. I have a question. Do you have any API to simulate the Google Plus stream effect in the list view? Yes, the fat.
Animates in?
Yes.
So that's just using a scale animation. I've not looked at the source, but you can make that all. Oh, I think you might be muted, Edgar. Still not hearing you.
What about now?
Oh, there you go.
Okay. My question is, do you have any API to simulate the Google Plus string effect in a list view?
So you're going to have to, no, there's no like just API or library to do it at the moment. You can easily build the effect yourself with the animation APIs.
With any animation API? Okay.
So yeah, essentially in your adapter, when you're turning, when the get view is called, you can start setting animation in the where as it comes in and animation starts.
Oh, okay. Wait. Thank you.
Okay. So I'm guessing Edgar's a fan. What do other people who are live here think of the updates to the Google Plus app? Like it? Don't like it? There's been some mixed comments.
I quite like it, I gotta admit. I think it looks good. I'd still love to be able to edit posts in it. That's one feature that I'm really missing from at the moment. But apart from that, yeah, I spend more time on it than I do the mobile website now.
Also to be added, to be able to join the Hangout over the phone, not just over the computer. They should add that.
Yeah, I think that's a restriction of Hangouts on there. I think regular Hangouts. I think you can I think it's a good job of like really surfacing interesting content, which is good. I wish you could see a few more comments maybe, but I think it's really visually beautiful. I think they need to do a little bit of work on the smoothness. But what I do love about it is how rapidly they're iterating and how they kind of keep on bringing in new effects, which is good. So looking forward to a tablet version at some point soon, hopefully, as well.
Yeah, that would be a lovely thing, because the tablet version is still something that kind of irritates me, because you want to see more information, and when you put it on the tablet, all it does is just expand the width of the posts, which is a little bit of a cop-out. On another issue, there was the question about how they're using the up button.
Yes.
And it seems to be they've used it to pull out a side control or a side set of levels. Is that going to be a recommendation? Is that against recommendation? Or is that just a bit of artistic freedom the designers have gone for?
So it's a pattern which we're seeing more and more. I think kind of it got popularized by Facebook, really, with the button in the top left opening a navigation drawer. I'm okay with it. I don't know if it'll become an official pattern or what's going to happen there. But I actually think it's conceptually very similar to the expand collapse pattern, which you can find on Android Design. So this is one of the patterns we've been touting for when you have multi-pane layouts, where you may have, say, two columns in a landscape layout, but then rotate the phone to portrait or tablet to portrait, and there just isn't enough room to have two columns side by side. So you hide it, but then you can bring it back again using the up affordance. And I think conceptually what Google Plus is doing is very, very similar. So it's almost like when you open the application, you're going to a second level deep, that content view, and hierarchically there's this level above you, much like the dashboard used to be, which is just this navigation pane. So I'm fine with them using the up to take you back to that navigation. What I'd like to see them do is probably drop the up arrow when the navigation pane is disclosed, and probably the screen title as well, just to reinforce that feeling like the navigation pane is this level above, and then when you switch sections, you can have restores the up arrow. So that's what I like. So I think, yeah, it's a natural extension of the expand collapse pattern, and I like it.
Cool. So what changes would you like to see added? Apart from the removing the up arrow, is there anything else that you think they should be looking into implement, or any suggestions you give anyone who's doing a similar style of app to make their app just sort of one step better than the current Google Plus one?
Sorry, is that a question to me?
Yeah. It's basically just getting some ideas on where would you take the app next and what you think developers could do to improve apps such as the one for Google Plus to make them more user-friendly, apart from the removing the up arrow when the navigation panel's expanded. Is there anything else that you can see that could be an opportunity for developers?
Well, I'll start off by saying what I think they do really nicely. I think they do really kind of a great job of floating up all the content. I mean, that's why you open the Google Plus app, right? It's to go and see your stream and look at all the great things that people are sharing, right? So they do a great job of getting you to that very, very quickly. And they've also done a nice job of visually floating up the Plus One, the reshare button. So I think those are the primary calls to action they're trying to get you to do. It seems to be, rather than commenting or something else, more longer-winded. So I think they're really trying to promote the very quick mobile it's kind of snacking pattern. So I want to quickly look at everything in my feed while I'm on the go and plus one and share some stuff, which is a slightly different than when I'm sat at a desktop and I have a bit more time and I might actually want to write a longer response or something like that. So I feel like they've kind of taken the challenge of mobile and really kind of done a nice job of optimizing the use cases rather than just taking the desktop site and you know, shrinking it down. So I think they've done some really nice stuff there. I'd love to see them do some more stuff around tablets, like if they could use some multi-pane layouts or really take advantage of all the extra space. I'd love to see that. So I don't know what the team are working on, what their priorities are, but hopefully that's on their side. Any other suggestions? What else would other people like to see or really enjoy in the Google Plus app?
There's one in the chat from Clemens. He's made a comment about the readability. I've seen that on a couple of things. When you've got a light background picture and the text put over the top, it's sometimes a bit difficult to read it.
Yeah, that's very true. I was looking at, I was actually playing with, has anyone checked out Spotify? Released a preview, so it's not in the Play Store yet, but it's on their blog, on their website. You can go and grab a preview of what their next app is going to look like. And it's pretty nice. They've done a lot to really embrace the ice cream sandwich look and feel. And they do a similar thing where they overlay some text on top of some album art. But what they do is they actually put a very subtle kind of dark gradient behind it. So even though they overlay white text, if it's a white album background, it's still fairly legible. So I think that's actually quite a clever solution to the same problem here. So, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing something like that, perhaps.
Cool.
We have our man in Munich, Mr. Sparky Rose, seems to...
I am back. Yes, I suffered a massive hangout failure where I had to hard reset the machine by holding the power button for several seconds. I could not beg, borrow, or steal any kind of an application quit or reset using any of the standard UI affordances.
So,
you know, failing to have a wall plug that I could actually yank out, I did the next worst thing I could think of.
We were just chatting a little bit about WhatsApp and some asking a question about the animation, and there's a good point that's just come up in the chat from Clemens, who says you'd love to see an option to disable the animation. And I think that's an interesting point asking that, because animation should be there to kind of delight and, you know, make the experience feel very fluid and alive, but they shouldn't become, like, you know, too much. I think that's what I feel sometimes playing with some HTC phones with Sense. I felt like the animations are great at first, but then after a while I feel like they kind of start to drag a little bit and get a little bit humdrum. And it just feels like they're kind of delaying me from getting to the content I want to get to. So that's something to bear in mind with animations. Like, make sure they're adding something. Don't do them just because you can.
I think there's always a trade-off between making your application as friendly as you can to the sort of the superpower users who want to tweak everything and keeping everything streamlined. So it's, you know, it's nice to have such things like that, you know, to have control panel settings or preference settings to turn those on and off.
What?
You have to figure out where you draw the line between control and just, you know, basically, where do you draw the line between control and design? Like, if you give the user total control over every aspect of the app, you haven't designed anything. Like, you're making no decisions. So that's the I think that's the balance you're trying to hit.
It's kind of the case for sensible defaults, and whether the sensible defaults are what will give the biggest sort of wow factor when the user picks a device up, or whether it's something that they'll be able to use long term.
Yeah, and it's also bearing in mind that us developers aren't, you know, perhaps as similar to all of our users. We're quite happy with like a massive screen of options, right? To us, that feels powerful, like we're in control. But take a second and think, do your users feel the same thing? I think that presenting a massive screen of options can be very daunting to some, especially to new users. So perhaps like hide those under like an advanced level if you must, or, you know, better yet would be no option at all and just have a sensible default.
It's unfortunate about the German block. I've just seen a comment from Johanni, who does Android UI patterns, and he'd love to join us, but unfortunately he's in Germany, so he's blocked at the moment. So hopefully he'll post some of his comments up later, and we can see what he thinks, because they come across some really nice patterns in apps.
I just seen him now, yeah, here on the G+ post. We can join in. Sorry, Yanni.
So, in my absence,
maybe talk about it.
Curious to know what I missed in my extended absence. Were there any questions from the people who are live in the Hangout right now who haven't had a chance to ask a question yet?
Yeah, I've got a question here regarding pin header list views. I know it's I delved into source code, and it's been commented that, you know, there might be a potential for it to actually surface out as a proper API, but I was wondering if, you know, somehow it could be bundled in one of the support packages, because I'm looking at the Android design for list views, and they specifically say, you know, use proper headers and, you know, have it so and so design. But trying to implement it for Holo is really, really difficult, and the actual calls and mucking around the source code is quite difficult as well when you're trying to scroll up and down the list.
Yeah, that is a good idea.
So have you looked at the Contacts application? So Contacts, There's a yeah, header.
I have, but the thing is, it's running off. I think it's I think it's a cursor adapter, and I'm trying to use it just based on a simple array adapter. But you know, I spent quite a while trying to adapt it, and I was like, no, this is just too hard. So I just ended up doing a static, you know, headerless. But ideally, you'd want to have something that scrolls along the same pattern that the contact application has.
So there is a library out there that's, well, not library, it's some source code. I remember I've done this before where I just, have you Googled around for it? There's, I can't even remember who it was who published it. But, let's see, is my Mac going to melt if I pull up Eclipse and try and look at the source code as well at the same time? I don't think it's going to work. But, yeah, there's definitely some source code out there for doing this pinned header.
Yeah, there's a comment from that. So Matt Gaunt in the chat is saying he thinks maybe Mark Murphy has something like this. So look in his sample applications.
Right. Okay.
Cool.
I had a question. I want to ask about the Galaxy Nexus. Is there a way to know which frequency out of the 5 uses to connect to the tower?
Probably not.
Sorry, is there an API for determining which frequency?
Because I know, for example, on the Galaxy S2, you can dial in a special number on the dial pad, and it shows you that information.
So is that part of the AOSP, or is that just Galaxy S2?
No, it's a Galaxy S2 running Gingerbread.
This is actually the first time I've ever heard anyone even suggest that.
I've never tried to do this. I don't know offhand. If you look into the Connectivity Manager, let's see what that exposes for you.
And the best thing that I had, you know, that I tried, is to dial in the 4636 number inside the dial pad, and it showed some information, but not that information.
Yeah. So if you get the network, the Connectivity Manager can get you a network info object.
Out of interest, what are you using information for? Because there may be a better way to achieve the same task.
Well, it's something to test with my new carrier, that it uses two frequencies, and for some reason, sometimes the internet works amazing, like 9 megabits per second, and other times it works like 0.5, and I think it's a frequency problem.
Is that in the same location, or is that moving around between places? Because it could just be a coverage issue.
No, it's on the same location, because it seems to be on a tipping point that I change frequencies. So on the Galaxy S2, I see the two frequencies, but on the Galaxy Nexus, I can't see it.
Is your phone rooted? Because, you know, it could just be on HSDPA versus UMTS. And sometimes it flicks between those two. And I get the same problem as well, but I'm running CyanogenMod, so I can tell when I'm on HSDPA, and it's significantly faster when you're on a HSDPA network. But it's on the same frequency, though.
I know my carrier uses two, that's why I'm asking, because if it used only one, it wouldn't be relevant.
Fair enough, yeah.
So you're basically trying to write a little app to log or show what frequency you're on, are you? So you can try and diagnose it.
Yeah, or to write an app or do something on the phone, dial in some special code, and it will show you it magically. But I guess you don't have that on the Galaxy Nexus.
Not that I know of. Like, I know if you look in the source code for the dialer, you can see these special codes that you can enter. You know, like. *#*, info *#*, and so on. You can actually grep for those in the dialer source code, and that will show you which of the tester screens which it leads to, and you can check those out and see if they give you some hint as to how to get towards the information, the frequency information looking for.
Can you post a link on the chat so I can log to it?
You can just look in the dialer application.
I'll grab a link off the GitHub mirror if you want, Nick.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Thank you. Sorry, Matt's
struggling. Thank you.
Got an interesting question on the sidebar chat here. Michael Handler wants to know, can you call garbage collection on an activity after finish so it will be removed from the stack? You know, I don't think you can call anything after finish. I think that starting with Gingerbread, our garbage collection got so good we stopped recommending that you call garbage collect at all. You should just let your things go out of scope and let the system take care of it. Do we have any other questions from the people in the Hangout?
It's kind of one that I'm not sure you'll be able to comment on, but it's there's a lot of talk about HTC tweaking the multitasking on the One X so that it only allows very few applications to run at any one time. Do you know if that's something that's likely to be adopted more widely, or is that a recommendation that's been supported by Google, or is that something HTC have just gone off the ranch and done themselves?
I don't even know if there's a ranch to be on. I mean, it's an OEM ROM and it's an OEM decision, isn't it? So I think it's just up to them, and I think the market is going to either reward them or punish them accordingly.
Yeah. True. I've seen a lot of people who aren't happy about it, but I suppose if users are happy, that's the main thing.
So yeah, I just remember the problem was with that list view thing. I did roll my own implementation, but I have a question. Is the background for Holo white, as in the emulator, or is it a gradient, as in the device? Because I noticed they're both different.
I think the default is...
Nick and Sparky, we seem to have lost you guys.
Yeah. So I think the default background is just a solid color, isn't it? It's either dark or light, depending on whether you use Holo Light or Holo Dark.
Yeah, that's what I thought. The emulator seems to be either just white or black, but on some devices there is a gradient or something like that. So I'm kind of puzzle. What's the, why is it not the same from the emulator to a device?
Well, they shouldn't be messing with Holo. I mean, there is a device default theme which the OEM can customize to their heart's content, but I think pure Holo should be pure Holo.
I'm going to have a check in the AOSP source code, because it might just be that it is supposed to be a gradient, but the emulator doesn't render the gradient in order to get a performance boost.
Oh, that could be right.
Yeah, I know you could just like fire up a shell app, targeting API level 15 or something.
I'm looking at API demos right now, trying to see if there's anything like a gradient here.
Yes.
This kind of look lighter at the bottom, doesn't it? Well, while we're figuring that out, any other questions from the Hangout? Clement says he's seen the gradient too.
Yeah, I thought that was the default in ICS. So how is that a problem with your pin adapter?
Oh, it's just the source for Mike Murphy's stuff and some of the other implementations of the pin headers use solid colors. Works perfectly fine when you're at the top of the list, but once you start going down to the bottom of the list, if there's a gradient, you know that you're looking at a header. You're not looking at a sort of a transparent hollow element. So when I tested it out on the emulator, I was like, sweet, this worked, you know, it looks great. And I put it on the phone, I was like, oh, what's going on here? It's the gradient. So that's the main problem. And I tried doing the transparent backgrounds for the pin headers, but then if you have a list view behind those headers, then you start seeing the text behind the other text, and it just gets very confusing.
Could you set a background color on the list view itself, so
that
you're not?
No, I don't think so. It was a transparent list view, so I think all list views are transparent. I think.
Yeah, by default.
And it just.
I'm looking at the context.
Yeah.
Like a light
background behind the list view, right? Yeah. Is that the kind of effect you're going for? Sorry, I just couldn't really hear. The audio was a bit soft on your end.
Oh, right. I was just saying, take a look at the context application. They basically set a solid white background. Is that the look you're going for? Can you do something similar like that to avoid this gradient issue?
No, I actually didn't. Maybe that is the case. I actually didn't notice. I thought the context app still actually had the gradient behind it, but I'll go have a look and see. I could just be mistaken with that.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I never noticed it before, but I'm looking at some of the API demos, and if you look at it, I don't know if you can tell, but it kind of looks lighter at the bottom than at the top, don't you think?
Yep.
Yeah, that's.
Yeah, I honestly never noticed before. This is because I think in code, not pictures. All that visual stuff, that's only distraction. I wanna see the world just like the Matrix. It should just be little screens of characters floating across my consciousness. Have you had any questions from the moderator yet?
We've seen a couple of questions from the moderator. We went through one on fragment communication.
Okay.
And we also talked about lock screen API.
Yeah.
We've got a few live participants. There's Michael. Do you have any questions, Michael? Anyway. Question about the animation issue. Question is in moderator? No, it's not. Okay, well, feel free to type it out.
Let's see. Did you talk about the Google Maps question? Where can I find documentation on what URL parameters Google Maps for Android supports? Well, that's an interesting question because it's not really an Android programming question, so I don't think we really have to take it. But I'll take it anyway, and I think the answer is it's not documented. There's this interesting link at querystring.org, and some of those URL arguments that they offer up actually work if you type them into the search window in Google Maps on Android. So I think there's some opportunity here for some enterprising soul to go and try those out and see which of those parameters work and which ones don't do anything.
There is some documentation of what query parameters mean. If you go to developer.android.com, go to the dev guide, and then right down the bottom, in the appendix, there's a section called Intentsless Google Apps. I'll post a link to it here in the chat. Okay. So this table here, this actually documents what parameters you can pass to Google Maps, and also to Street View. Tells you how to pass a lat long pair with a zoom level or a query and so on and so forth. So those, it's not kind of like officially a query stream, it's actually in Geo colon format rather than I think URL format, but it's the same idea.
That's cool.
So Matt asks in the chat, are these complete? I don't know. This list has been static, I think, for a while. So I don't know if any components would be, like the Maps application which handles this intent. So I wouldn't be surprised there's more functionality that hasn't been implemented, but this would be declared functionality. So Matt's saying he thinks that the map app takes more functionality. I've seen it handle things like the navigation format, for example. So if you have a web URL with a navigation type URL, Matt would be quite happy to pop up and do that. But like I say, that's not a documented feature, so it may break different versions. So Michael has painstakingly typed out his question in the chat, so should we go back to that? He asks, he's noticed that fill after does not always move an object after animation has finished running. Is that fixed in 3.0? Or maybe fixed with pre 3.0 where I list the animation finish and then move everything to start one different. Yeah, so this speaks to the deeper issue that the pre-Honeyclone animation framework basically moved around the rendering of things on screen, but didn't actually move the underlying objects. So for example, if you animated a button to the right by 50 dips, then it would appear to be on the right on the screen, but its actual kind of clickable bounds were still in the same place. So yeah, you're very correct that the new animation system in Android 3.0, the android.animation package, does fix that. That does actually move objects around rather than just where they're painted upon the screen. So it's not so much a fix as a completely different animation package. I guess you're talking about what's the best way to approach this kind of difference then. So there's some things out there like Nineod Androids, which is a great framework for being able to write to the 3.0 API and have it backwards compatible. But I don't believe that fixes this object. I think if it is running on the old animation system, it won't actually move the object's bounds. So I think you're kind of probably going to have to write different code for pre and post 3.0. Has anyone else got any experience with this? Wants to share with the group?
Sounds like a good opportunity to go multi-APK and or have a deluxe tablet and honeycomb an ice cream sandwich edition. Michael Hantler likes deluxe editions. Okay. Step 3, profit, is that what you're saying? What was step 2 again?
Magic happens.
That's right. Just been joined by Mario Vivani.
Hi there.
Yeah. Hello. Welcome to the Hangout. Do you have any questions about Android development?
Yeah, I have one question, and it's about the list view inside the fragment list view. Okay. You know, I programmed this white background. Well, actually, I assume it was default as a white background. But then I tested out on Gingerbread and Froyo devices, as well as on tablets. So with the Honeycomb, and always was okay. All was okay, and while scrolling, it was okay. And then I got ICS upgrade, and then I tested out this activity with the fragment list view, and actually sometimes scrolling the list view, that some rows of this list view were as scrolling, they were rendered as a black background. So I wanted to ask, I saw this putting white background with a drawable white background, so actually now when I scroll the list view, it's all okay. But I wanted to ask, as a default, maybe if this is happening because as a default the background of the views are don't have a white background. Do they have a black background? So what can be this issue?
Yeah, this sort of gets to what we were talking about a few minutes ago. I kind of suspect that the default may be a transparent background.
Yeah.
So I think that having a, even assigning a style that's conditional on V11, so that you get a list background style that only kicks in when you are on Honeycomb or higher, would be a fine solution. And if you want your, if you want your list views to look the same on all the different versions, because you have, you have a user interface vision and you want to keep a consistent aesthetic, that's an excellent design choice if that's the way you want to do it.
Okay. Good.
Well, let's see what the moderator has in store for us. Here's a question from Gabriel Ittner in Berlin, who has a lot of challenging questions that I don't know the answers to. He says, I have a widget containing a list view. In the remote views service, I use a cursor loader to query data from my content provider. The cursor loader automatically re-queries when I call change notify on the URI. Should I still implement a content observer? And then he's referencing one of our sample apps. Says app widgets can be stick around a long time without getting reloaded. Refreshing the content changed with the cursor loader does work short term, but he wants to know, will it work long term as well, or does there come a point when the cursor loader stops requerying? And I believe, if I recall correctly, he's citing our weather widget that's in our samples. And my answer to him in the moderator is, I don't know. So maybe somebody in the Hangout has an opinion on this. When you are powering a widget with a list view with a content provider, should you also do a content observer in the widget?
My gut feeling says no, that's what the loader should do for you.
That was sort of my feeling too. Similar to another question that I gave him, just because it's in one of our sample codes does not necessarily mean that it's the end-all be-all of best practices. We try to encapsulate some best practices in our samples, but we're not perfect, and sometimes if a sample may be oriented towards trying to illustrate best practices in one aspect of the API and they cut some corners on the other ones.
Or something new like loaders comes along and the sample doesn't get updated for it.
That too. I'm thinking of, in particular, of some samples that have a lot of static internal classes where you have an activity and then you have 17 classes inside the activity. It makes for a nice, well-contained sample, but it's perhaps not your, not exactly the poster child for factoring. So, The next question in the moderator was also by Gabriel, who wanted to know, in the Wiktionary sample, says it uses a service to prevent an ANR, application not responding. But since it's a simple service and it runs in the UI thread, how does it help to prevent an ANR just to put it in service? Shouldn't the service run its own thread? And I think the answer to that is yes. The service should still spin off its own thread in order to prevent the ANR. And I wanted to take this opportunity also to say that a very convenient way to make a service run in its own thread is to create an intent service, which does that automatically. It's a newer form of service, and it's very convenient, and the syntax to create an intent service is very simple. So I recommend them. Any more questions in the chat? Have there been any questions in the plus stream? I haven't been following that.
I've been refreshing that. Okay. Lots of frustration about having to go into Germany.
I'll follow a quick question about my boss wanted me to ask, is it possible to use RFID chips?
I've never heard that it is. I think it's a completely different radio technology.
So would I have to use like ADK or something like that, or a different external device, and then transfer the data to the Android device? Or
that might do.
I'd investigate if you can use NFC, because there's a lot more support built into the platform for that. But it's not an option, and you have to work with RFID. If there's already some infrastructure in the field or something, then yeah, something like the ADK would be the way to go.
Okay, it depends on the client, not on us. It's the requirement by the client. So.
Well, I'm a big believer in telling the customer they're not always right, and that they should make requirements that are easier for you as a developer to implement. That goes down really well.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's their choice, so just asking.
I'm joking. Actually, early in my career, I did sort of take a stand and tell a customer that the software package they mandated that we should use wasn't the best suited to the task, and I proposed something I thought was a bit more powerful and could do what they wanted. And they went with my choice, and it turned out to be a good decision in the long run. But if I had to go back and do it again, I'd probably also push back on their design, saying that maybe they should have designed something that was a little more implementation friendly as well.
Well, I suggested the MFC, but the problem is it's already a final hardware product, so to change a final hardware product to something else is a bit difficult. It's not something that is in production, it's already out there.
Right. Yeah, it's a lot harder to push back on design requirements before you start getting gray hairs like I've got. And it gives me a little more gravitas. We just got a hello from Noam in the sidebar chat. Is Noam also in the Hangout? Did you want to ask us a question? You're in the dark there. Noam's writing a little MMS, a little help. Well, that's pretty open-ended, isn't it? I think we need a slightly more targeted question than that. So Noam says the camera isn't working. Have you seen the developer training article about using the camera? I'll be the first to admit it's not perfect since I wrote it, but it should at least get the fundamentals out. Listening to push WAP. Push WAP? WAP as in what we used before telephones had internet? Wow. How would I parse the MMS message? Yeah, I don't know. Sorry, I don't know anything about that.
So I don't know either, but I'd probably say look at the MMS app in the Android open source tree as your first port of call and see if there's any pointers you can garner from that.
Excellent suggestion. Now, always refer back to the AOSP, your resource of final resort.
I imagine it is huge. What I find is quite hard, the easiest way to navigate a project I don't really know about is just open up the manifest file and see what all the entry points are to the app that way. That's what I like to do and find out, you know, what's the first thing you see on screen so you can really map your experience from using the app to the code. That's the way I like to do it. New way of doing this in Windows.
You can't build the Android source on Windows. I'm just reading Noam's follow-up. And finally, I've managed to dig out the holo theme definition. The background should be solid black or solid white for holo light. Gradients must be something that somebody's tweaked with.
Hmm. Okay.
Is that right?
Yeah. I suppose it's one of those things that's not absolutely vital if it's almost unnoticeable to users.
Interesting. Well,
I see that we're about out of time, and I would like to thank you all for coming. I need to clear out of here. I'm in a doubly booked resource, but if the rest of you want to keep on chatting, feel free to carry on, but I need to go now. So,
see you, Sparky.
Comments, doing.